Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined this week by Matt Lang of SFAM. Is that?
SFAM, yes, is how we say it. I'm new to the
SFAM.
SVAM, S-V-A-M International. We are a international company. We do IT staffing. We do, RPA, robotic process automation. And that's our bread and butter.
So you're like a mid-market managed services provider, upstream from where most MSPs probably sit.
Yes, absolutely. We're in that space. We live in government, but I have owned my own one man MSP, and I am
that usually means it owns you.
Owned me, and therefore I sold it onto and worked inside of a 25 person MSP for 10 to 12.
So you years. Were saying SVAM a lot until you sold.
It's funny because I think we all were, right? Because
right.
If you say it a little funny, it comes out as spam. And I think we've all been saying that and trying to figure out whether to dismiss spam email or really take it seriously. Like, is spam email an incident? I don't know. So
could be. Depends on who opened it. Yeah,
exactly. And so, you get into all of that conversation. But yeah, mid-market MSP that I'm very pleased to be at, but a lot of history inside, one-man shop and kind of what I would say is that, The majority of our market, where that kind of 25 person, they serve that 100 to 300 or sub market of
company. Okay.
Need there. So that's where I've lived and breathed most of my life.
So as an overqualified for the show, obviously, with all your commas at the end of your name. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's important. I want to have the audience hear some of your origin story, largely because you said the one man MSP, we lovingly call them, a trunk slammers. And I always would joke and say, hey, just because one is a trunk slammer doesn't mean it's not the most expensive vehicle one can buy at $250,000 that,
No, I think, if there's one thing that summarizes me, it's make IT matter, right? I think you
right.
talked about it in person. It's make it matter.
Because
that person doing that job should be earning just as much as the person who's doing it at a Fortune 500.
Absolutely. Right. And so it should, And your ability to impact change in some respects might be easier as a trunk slammer than as someone who's a part of a 25 or 50 person MSP, where just because you found something doesn't mean you can get buy-in to address and solve for something upstream from where you sit on the proverbial totem pole.
I see you. I see you've been doing this a while, Chris.
I'll just, a couple days. This is, my first, not my first rodeo, but maybe my first time on a horse.
Yep.
So talk me through it. Like, and obviously it doesn't end, but going through and achieving the CISP or CISP is no small feat. Like, I think it for those listening, like, hey, I'm not necessarily proposing that you go out and do this, but at the very least, I think anybody who's in managed services that's serious about the business side of cybersecurity and being able to have better conversations about it, I encourage you to at least embark on going through some of the training, because it's a huge eye opener.
Yeah, the people I've mentored a bunch of people into the CISP in our industry, and the people, the ones who, most of them can achieve it with a little bit of mind shift away from a technical mind space.
Sure. We were talking about that before.
Mind space. Yeah. But, that was definitely my origin, right? So I, for whatever reason, inside my org, I couldn't even say, like, 6 years ago, there was a decision for myself and another person internally to pursue and understand the CISP. And so we went and did it. And it was high level. I think I spent like 2 weeks in a boot camp and then 6 months studying, probably 10 hours a week, right? So after work, weekends, heavily, just learning all the material and really trying to feel comfortable going into the exam. Didn't feel like I passed it, got out of it. That's pretty common from what I've heard. But a lot of it was around being able to allow me to feel that I have the authority to speak on these topics. And it definitely provided me that. Although I will say, it didn't click until I had a mentor who'd been in the industry for a long, someone I was able to hire in as a virtual CISO into an organization, and that it really all clicked for me. But the CISPE gave me that foundation to feel that I'm valid in this space, absolutely. Sure. And then, you know, I think as we were talking, right, that origin story really came down to digesting all that material inside of a 25 person MSP. I was sitting there going like, how on earth do you make this happen? You talk about third-party risk management 6 years ago. Now I think we understand it a little bit better, right?
Sure.
Kaseya happened. Everyone started to understand what risk management is a little bit. But how do you do vendor due diligence? Like, these questions were in my head 6, 7 years ago.
What's a GRC tool, Matt? What's a GRC tool? Ask that question 10 years ago. That was not a buzzword in any MSP's vocabulary.
The only one that we were trained on was Archer, right?
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Everyone was like, stay away from that. It's too complicated. So yeah.
Or you had the free Aramba and you're like, this is amazing. There were a couple others that were in that sort of free open source space. But like, when you really dug into what they were capable of doing, you're like, oh my word, this is it's like trying to move a mountain and all you have is a pitchfork.
And then you start to hear these stories inside the industry. I've heard, you know, representatives from huge companies like Cisco say that they just manage their stuff on Excel spreadsheets.
Sure.
Because they can, that's what they do. And you're like, okay, like, what am I dealing with here? So that was where this all started. I was lucky enough to get pulled in, you know, through my network into larger jobs. And I came back into the MSP space trying to do security, and definitely found CompTIA as a place where that is, you know, able to suit, you know, kind of aligning at our small, medium business mark to help the MSP was big here. And thus started my journey, and just kind of like, I don't know, I think I've seen others in our space say, I stopped caring about the feedback a little bit more and started putting myself out there to just say what I think is right. And it seems to have panned out.
Do you feel like your ability to, you know, as having gone through and achieving what you did from a certification standpoint, did it give you a mind shift from a culture, like, not necessarily that you have a dictation of culture for an entity, but recognizing what the shift or change needs to be in the organization to be able to impact that change of a different mindset?
Yeah, they talk a lot about this inside the CISPE, and it's hard to extrapolate it. It's one of those things I think I've heard later as I've mentored people.
Sure.
But it's policy, plan, process.
Sure.
It's kind of like we do that, like, you know, people, process, technology in that order, I always say, right? It's become a common phrase in our industry. But understanding that you have to govern from the top down is a big part of the CISPE. And so making sure that you've got buy-in at the top and you're writing your policies, that then you don't just write a policy, right? You have to train that policy. You have to govern, you have to edit that policy.
Yeah.
You have to be comfortable talking about it, and you have to make sure the organization follows it. So that mindset took a little bit to embed what I thought was valuable inside the SMB space, inside of a small company, right? Because it can feel lofty and lost. I think NIST gets a lot of this bad, you know, this bad kind of idea in small business, because it's very lofty stuff. But that one really tapped into it, right? We can talk about micro policies, but having a governance policy overall, it shifted my mindset. It allowed me to say, like, no, this is right. But as I said, I relied on mentors a lot. I don't think it was just the certification. I know it wasn't just the certification.
Well, you have to, I mean, that's one of the reasons why you can't just decide to go and take the exam and be like, okay, now I have the CISPE certification. You have to apply, and you have to have some other things.
It's the beginning.
Right.
Right.
I think of
that toil, it's the beginning.
Right. I was thinking of like the pyramid idea, and you mentioned the top down, but in my head I'm going, but you know, as you go up to the top, it gets smaller and smaller. I feel like the stage one of that model of the, you know, the top down idea is actually, it's the bottom level of the pyramid, where it's got to create a foundation that you can build upon. Kind of as you go up, there's lots of things that need to happen. But if your foundation on this isn't built well, that policy process, those kind of things with leadership buy-in, it's very difficult to move anywhere else into that.
Yeah, I think the pyramid's probably a bad way to think about it, right? Because I think you're right.
There is iceberg, maybe an iceberg.
Yeah, maybe iceberg's a better way to good way to think about it. Yeah, the pyramid, the shape, but not the pyramid, the object.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
So,
that's fair.
So I don't. I think it's just the shape in that you don't need much policy up the top. You need more, you know, standards and guidelines and plans that live in the middle, and then you need tons of process to make sure it can all execute. So yeah, the process is the foundation, and you shouldn't not build process. Like, I'm not advocating that, but if you don't have policy governing it, there was this, it's probably another thing that formed where inside my MSP there was this big push to write SOPs, right? To write standard operating procedures.
Well, that way someone else can follow it. You don't have to be there if you get hit by a bus.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. But there was nothing governing what are we trying to align the SOPs with, right? So you can have policies are very brief, short, live at the top, and yes, I think they're needed, but like really kind of like the plans will have things that can be executed by an educated individual. The process is going to be stuff that you need done no matter who's touching it. And so that structure definitely comes from CISB. But again, mentors, training, having the confidence in all of this, this is why I'm here, right? I want to try to make sure this stuff gets put into the brains of the MSP community so that we can start to think about not just our own businesses, because I think if you do this right, it goes into how other businesses can be run properly.
Well, and we all know that this is a thought process many MSPs have, like, how do I create opportunity? How do I, you know, make money from this? Because at the end of the day, if I'm not making, and I know that that's the wrong way to look at this, but the reality is if you do this well, that will be a byproduct because the opportunity is definitely there. When you realize like these things need to happen within my client's environment, you shouldn't go talk to them about doing those things if you have not yet done them in your own environment. It's just bad business because eventually it will come back and bite you.
Yeah, it gave us a lot of, you know, we talk about resiliency and defensibility in our industry a lot, right? So having this background of having a policy allowed us to kind of go, when a client would have a question, they don't have it implemented. You say, well, your policies don't define that this is needed. Thus, we're not delivering it to you. It allowed you to start to talk about that gap in a very, you know, kind of like business focused governance manner that I thought allowed you to kind of really define out what the MSP deliverable was really tightly and thus upsell. Right. So ultimately, like if you do this and understand it well, every weakness, whether it's in you or in your clientele, is an opportunity and can lead to an upsell as long as you frame it. Now, you have to have a base of trust. You have to be trusted in that position. But absolutely, this is where I see, you know, this shift in our industry and that you and I are both so passionate about.
Yeah. The, you know, one thing that comes to mind, you know, I obviously have not put the effort into, you know, achieving CISB, and I don't know that I necessarily could pass, but I've spent a lot of time on the training videos. And one thing that always pops out at me every time I have any conversations around policies or on operational change or process and procedure within it, or even buying technologies, is how does this facilitate the triad, the confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Availability is always my favorite. Everyone always used to throw availability at me like, oh, this thing went down. It's a security problem. I'm like, okay, we got to think about this again.
Remember, it's availability, not accessibility. So it's a specific word choice.
Yes.
So the thought process I had around that is as I go through this vicious cycle that we see MSPs go through, is to remember when you are trying to solve for, can you maintain all three of those in what you're going to have as the outcome? Because if you can't, what did you miss? And how do you correct course before this becomes a problem for you in the future? And that seems to be, for the most part, when I've had MSPs running into the wall on something, is first, take the triad and go, am I breaking any of the in to deliver on? If you are, then something's wrong. You either misunderstood the control or you misunderstood the implementation that you were that the tool or process or service is violating something in that. Because we have seen over and over again where you get through later sets of later into the control set of like CIS 18, you can break something in one of those other controls because you followed it too much to the letter of the control itself rather than the intent behind what it's trying to help you achieve.
It's interesting. So yeah, look, the CIA triad is at the core of, you know, all of the certifications. And, you know, I applaud you for, you know, able to talk about ISC squared and those certifications, because I think it's valuable wherever your knowledge comes from.
Sure.
But yeah, I like that you're tying that back to a practice, right? I think those whenever you have a problem and you can boil it down to that to make it make sense to someone, absolutely. But you know, I think we have this challenge in that there's a large breadth of knowledge inside of cybersecurity. I think it's very misnamed. I think privacy overlaps in it. I think compliance overlaps in it. I think it's not necessarily always a separate discipline. It can be just good IT practice. So, you know, it's a confusing industry, absolutely. And, you know, I only hope that we can make it simpler. And I try every day for anyone I interact with to kind of make it simpler. But it does start with business process in
sure.
mind.
Talk about that for a minute, because you bring up a good point. I think about like the physical layer, physical security, like remove, you know, go back 20 years and we talk about, you know, door hardware. And then fast forward to today and how are we managing those door entry and exit systems? I mean, largely they're now on the same or hopefully not the same network, but they're VLAN off, but they're now part of what IT has in many cases a responsibility for. Or even, you know, HVAC is now connected to
Target,
you
know, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I wasn't going on the bad side of it already, but yeah, that's a good point. Like we have to almost be willing to embrace things that we aren't necessarily good at. Whether it's phone systems or I don't do printers, but you know, like we hear it all the time, but
yeah, it's
talk
tough
to me about navigating that. Cause I think that's a big roadblock for MSPs.
I think we've got another podcast in the brewing about imposter syndrome, but yeah, you have to tackle things that maybe you're not comfortable with. This is the big problem in our space.
Sure.
You know, I think there's assumptions.
It's converging.
Yeah, there's assumptions that we handle things. I mean, every MSP knows that, right? Like
right.
Every MSP has assumptions of their clients to think the things they think they're handling.
The implied because of who you are, right? You're
right. Because everything's IT now. Everything.
Right.
The doors, the physical space, absolutely. It controls, if you start talking about OT, operational technology, not just IT, that gets assumed in our space now too, although we are starting to now do a better job of separating it out. You know, I'm a big fan of mentor and peer groups. I obviously you are too. You know, I think those are great places to throw these questions out. I'd say at its core, and it's a core at a lot of problems, is getting rid of your fear of feeling stupid by asking questions. I think that's a lot. When I do my mentoring of young people trying to get in this industry, it's ask questions. Don't think it's stupid.
Yeah. Wayne says this a lot. There's no stupid questions. It might be a silly question, but silly questions still have answers too.
Yeah. And it's an old adage, and maybe I'm just jaded by there are no stupid questions, because I think we've said it for a long time, but it needs a bit of a twist, I think, to feel relevant, or needs a meme, you know, nowadays in order to make it feel relevant. But it's not just about that there aren't stupid, it's getting over that hurdle of feeling it and seeing if there's someone in a peer group in your, you know, in the MSP community that can help. Because without that, I don't know that we can, you know, we talk about raising the tide, and that's why we're both here. And I think that's part of it. But that's a large challenge, because if you think you know this, you might not. And that's where we might have a bigger problem. And I think you and I have both run into those situations where we see people who think they know what they're doing.
Right.
Run into it, you go take over, you're like, oh boy. But it's all with the best intentions. No one's going to blame you, but that's a large shift there.
I had a high school English teacher who had this sign on his on the back of the classroom that said, "He who asks a foolish question is a fool for 5 minutes. he who does not ask a question is a fool forever. And I thought, so true. And it goes into a lot of the things that we see out there that aren't necessarily tied to IT. At the airport, you have that if you see something, say something. It has nothing to do with technology and IT.
But it's risk.
Right.
Right. It's the same. Yeah.
The third one that comes to mind is you drive down the highway and you see the car off the side of the road, maybe even in the ditch, and you don't call 911 because you're like, I'm sure someone else already did call 911.
Yeah.
And you're like, how many cars have gone by that could have called 911? Because no 911 operator is like, you're the fifth person to call in for the same issue. Please stop calling. We're busy. Right.
Yeah. Like, and look how we train our clients. Right. I mean, at least in my organizations, you don't want that flood of calls, but you need that flood of calls in order to know something is bigger than what it might, you know, might initially seem as. It's the same reporting structure. So just, you know, it's
that's
not
like merging tickets, right? It's don't merge tickets until you're definitively positive that the three or four or eight people that submitted the ticket are all talking about the same thing. Cause I don't know, when I was at the school district, I would get this all the time. The internet's not working. Oh, you're saying that your SIS application isn't responding. You're actually one of three people that have this problem in your building of 200, and everybody else is just fine.
But I might fault you there in your response being a little attitude-y, right? Because I think that...
Oh, no. My attitude response here is articulating that I should not lump that comment into the internet is down because three or four people might submit
that.
I need to do due diligence and ensure that, in fact, the ticket that was opened is genuinely because the fiber was cut, not I have an application that's not working. Because if I were to have merged those tickets together and they're all for different problems because of the symptom being that the internet is not present, I have failed everybody that has opened a ticket and possibly created an additional problem.
You're making me think of something interesting, right? Where it's, I think
everything you think of is interesting, Matt.
Well, okay. So there's this challenge I had when I came back to really focus and execute on security inside of an MSP, which was MSPs don't want tickets coming in, but if you don't have, because, you know, they don't want that ratio looking bad. They don't want that metric looking bad. They don't want that time spent. But if you don't look at tickets coming in or you don't have lots of information to analyze, you kind of can't do security well. It's almost like those are user reported logs of what's happening that need
to be analyzed. That is a very interesting way to look at it.
And so, like, this was this dichotomy that I was dealing with around how do I have a help desk that takes in information? How do I make sure they alert me to what potentially could be going on, whether or not it's an incident, cybersecurity incident, you know, whether it could be something bigger? It's a challenge we all face. But if you're trying, if your game inside of an MSP is to not fix the problem, but to close tickets, you're going to be in for a rough time with security. So there's that, that's part of that culture shift that I think is really,
you know, to add to your interesting shift here with the, you know, the human audit log, if you will. I was thinking back to my days when I was with a larger MSP and we were working with like really, really big clients, like thousands of employees. And they asked us to produce some reporting around help desk tickets. They wanted to know, they didn't want to have to ask. They wanted to be able to see a dashboard that showed when there was a spike in uptick in help desk tickets. And they also wanted to see when there's a huge spike in closing of help desk tickets. And at first we were very hesitant to give them this information because we thought they were like, well, we're just, you know, monitoring your ability to do help desk. No, what they wanted to know is there a pattern emerging that was tied to what was happening with their staff, either doing something wrong, potentially a regional outage of services from ISPs. You listed, it could be one of those scenarios.
It can be,
but it's a way to make a decision or to help form a decision process or even a triage process around why are we suddenly seeing this pattern emerge?
And oh my God, use that information to your advantage as an MSP, because I can't tell you if I can probably count memorably like four or five instances where the noisy people who reach out to you and say, my thing not working, my browser won't go here, I can't, where's my mouse? Those people are typically difficult employees, or they're using the computer as a reason for not executing on their job. They're often using an external help desk as you know, to kind of like explain why they didn't execute on something. And if you can see that pattern, you know your people better. Internal IT teams have this already. External, that's so valuable to bring back to your whatever kind of meeting structure you have.
You start to add the caliber of client you're dealing with too in that regards. I will say this though, that the client that we were working with, what was interesting is usually if we had a steep spike in opening of tickets, it was almost every single time tied to a change in their software development cycle for the product that they were putting in front of their employees and their clients. So that was where we, you know, as this evolved over time and they became more communicative to our team, it was, this had never had anything to do with us. It was, they were trying to separate for themselves what was stuff that needed to be solved by actual IT support on help desk side versus what needed to be solved for on their internal dev team side because of something that they introduced into the software that was buggy. Yeah. And we would have never, like, we had to really open our eyes and our ears to go, wait, is our ego going to get in the way of us producing what they're asking for at the risk of losing them as a client, when in fact this had nothing to do with us in the first place?
Transparency, right? I think ultimately transparency wins out. It can be, you know, kind of like what you were saying earlier, right? You can feel like the idiot in the beginning, but ultimately you're the idiot if you don't show it. It's the same concept of say something, I think. It's transparency. If you facilitate that transparency, it'll circulate and come back to you.
I like that.
While you're working in a nonprofit, right? Because you see that cycle back. It's all about that sharing of information and that full transparency between people. That's what creates a working relationship. They need our expertise as an MSP, right? Yep. Absolutely need it. And more every day when you start to get into the cybersecurity. So you've got to work as a wing of a company. You cannot be this distant thing that's going to hide information.
Yeah, it's not a power model.
It doesn't work. You're not a vendor, you're a partner. You're a partner.
So we've got a few minutes left. You said something before we actually jumped on this call. We were talking about, you know, the things that maybe CompTIA has that are valuable to you as an MSP.
The one thing that I think isn't trying to boil the ocean, as you said, right?
Yeah, because
yeah,
we have to make decisions as MSPs around threat intelligence feeds, you know, lowering risk. I mean, fill in the blank. We're a managed service provider, right? And like all of this convergence of technology and all this just challenging that whether you're a one person MSP or 100 person MSP, it's just a matter of economy of scale. The problems are very similar, if not the same.
Yeah.
You mentioned this at the beginning. I think it's super valuable to share with the audience what the ISAL means to you, the CompTIA ISAL, and why the approach that you've taken, what it means to you. Because I think for our audience, we have a lot of MSPs on that are CompTIA members. And I think to hear this might help them re-engage or get engaged for the first time with the ISAL.
It's the same thing. It's transparency, is information sharing, just to latch it back to what we're, you know, to carry the theme through here, right? The ISAL, what does it stand for? Information sharing.
An analysis organization,
right? So I was introduced to this through a mentor of mine, came from the financial space, the FS ISAC, right?
Yeah.
So this was kind of like something that I brought in as a passion. I was like, okay, CompTIA have this. Awesome. Wait, it only costs $400 a year? Awesome. Let's do this. And it really allowed me to, what I did with it was drive internal education. So this allowed me to make relevance of information that comes from, you know, the outside organizations. How do we make this relevant? And I used it to internally educate and make relevant what was going on. I pivoted it into some marketing or sales conversations, right? These are timely things for people who are engaging with clients to be able to speak authoritatively about that will make you and help you seem as an expert in the space. to engage your clients. It's all about engagement. It's all about making sure you seem knowledgeable and authoritative in this space in order to sell stuff. You don't need to go and sell them a thing. You need to sell them your authority. You need to sell them your abilities. And if this is just one of those things I thought was really salient in the tool chest, in the tools that I used to help with that.
Yeah. So just to paraphrase,
please.
Internally educate, externally market to, or at least authoritatively share with your clientele why you are that authority.
Yeah. Test on yourself. You know, you've got internal people who don't know this space well. Share it with them and say, what does this mean? And then you go, oh, well, this means this and this and this. Now you're better educated to go talk to your client. That kind of exchange was so valuable to me as I tried to establish a security focus.
Absolutely. So that was your pick, and I'll give one to go with it. I didn't really consume anything in the forums, but I found the Sophos Intellix tool to be an amazing resource when clients were like, no, just let that through. That's fine. I know it's in quarantine. You can release it. It's totally okay. And I'm like, well, before I release it, I'm going to just go throw this into Intellix and see what it says. And I'm like, over my dead body, or you're firing me. Am I releasing this to you? Here's the report that I got out of Intellix that would happen if we released it. And they're like, oh, dead silence, right? Like they're suddenly like, wait a second. You're not willing to release this, and you know what would actually happen to my organization based on what is in that email. Yes. Would you like to have me, you know, try and capture what else might have been? Oh, wait, there's nothing in here worth me sending to you, because that's what would happen if you actually opened this email. And it's just a completely different approach to, you know, clients always right, because the client's always right until they're not right. So if I can give them information so they can make a better decision without slapping them in the face, that was how I used it. And like you've described one, I'm describing one. I'm going to make it a point for the next few episodes to highlight different pieces of the ISAO or the cyber forums that are of value to our listeners.
Yeah. And get, you know, derive different things from different people. Cause everyone's
absolutely getting... Talk yeah. to people that are in there, right? The cyber forums is not this closed box that says you can't talk about the challenges that you have. Yeah. The other one I'll share, because this came up with some members. If you're familiar with Flipboard, the last couple of years, I started flipping articles into a magazine that I curated called MSP 1337. And I would periodically share articles that I was flipping, just one article at a time. And I'm like, why don't I just share the feed to the people that are consuming stuff I share with them and go, hey, it may not be every day, so it's not going to be news that's blasting you in your face, but as you read curated content, know that I'm populating stuff that I see as valuable into this. And so like the last one that I had that was in there that I thought was beneficial was the actual, how did the 3CX hack actually happen and how they put the two different attacks together to achieve their end goal. Is that important for everybody? Not necessarily, but it's similar to what we're seeing coming out of the cyber forums. And that's only why I bring it up, is the ISAO brings lots of content like that together for you so that you can make informed decisions without having to go chase or hit, you know, type into the Google search to find answers to your problems.
Yep.
Matt, one last thing. What would you like to share before we close this out?
What would I like to share?
If I missed something.
No, I don't think. What did we miss, Chris?
I mean, this we covered wonderful. Everything, literally.
I think we're done. You know, look, I have a passion for this space. Yep. I love MSPs. I love technology. I love security, and you know, I'm excited. If anyone wants to connect with me, please find me. But you know, I'm always willing to talk cybersecurity. And you know, I think that our world has a lot. I keep on thinking it's going to get easier. It doesn't. And, you know, I hope everyone's up ready for the challenge that faces us ahead.
Well, I think to be fair, while it's not getting easier, we can honestly all say that the sophistication of tools we have in our arsenal have improved tenfold.
Oh, yeah. The fact that they've come
central
down.
Management? What?
Well, no, yeah, just like the tools coming down have definitely helped, but I don't like to emphasize the tools. I think
no.
I think there's still education, hence why we're here. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, what I'm passionate about.
So awesome.
I'm always open to have that conversation with you or anyone else in the space.
Well, for those of you listening, this has been an episode of MSP 1337. Thanks and have a great week.